Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
With us today, we have Jeremy McDonald, and we'll introduce him in just a second. But we wanted to thank all of you for the awesome response that we've had on iTunes and Podomatic and our website. And thank you for those of you who left a review. We are announcing now the winner from our iTunes review. The one who had the most creative review was Melinda Sprinkle. And on Twitter, she is MCM Sprinkle. She had what we thought was the most creative review out there for our podcast. And during the podcast last week live, Dave gave out a prize to whoever tweeted first with the picture of their winning card from the magic trick. And that was Victoria Olson out of Canada. She is at MS Victoria Olson on Twitter. And so y'all can check out our winners and all that kind of great stuff. My name is Todd Nesloney. On Twitter, I am Tech Ninja Todd.
And my name is Stacey Huffine, and I'm at Tech Ninja Stacey on Twitter.
And my name is Chris Kessler. I am Kessler with one S for iPad Sammy, who can't seem to get that right.
And our guest today is Jeremy McDonald. He's a father of four, a husband, fifth grade teacher, and an instructional technology coach. He's also a 2012 EduBro Awards winner, part of the Digital Learning Day team, and travels around the country speaking about technology and education. Welcome, Jeremy.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Awesome.
Jeremy, why don't you tell us your Twitter handle, please?
My Twitter, I don't have a sound effect. Do you guys have that queued up?
No. We weren't sure if you wanted us to use it or not.
My Twitter handle is Mr. Mechnology, MrMacnology. And that actually has more to do with my last name and little to do with the mothership known as Apple. actually my job has changed as well a little bit. I have a really long title now. It's called Integrated Technology Systems Coordinator. And wow. I'm working out of right here, right there. There we go. In the Pine Schools in Bend, Oregon. So, I'm glad to be here. I'm excited to talk with you guys today.
Great. Well, we'll just get into it. I'll start by asking, we just want to know a little bit about your background before you became a teacher and maybe what brought you to that point and who you are today.
Long story short,
yeah.
I graduated in advertising. I went to almost 3 years of communications and advertising, and then decided to take a little bit of time off and went into business school to see. I like that, and I had an accounting teacher that kind of said, you can't always choose the route that's going to bring you the most money, and you got to go with what you're passionate about. And I've always been passionate about learning and working with others, and so kind of from that moment on, I decided to become a teacher. It took me a while to convince the school to let me change majors because I was already ready to graduate, and changed majors, finished a three-year program in about 18 months. So I could graduate with my degree in elementary ed and have a master's in literacy. And been doing this, I've been teaching for about 7 years, 8 years, and now I'm now focused on teacher development. So I'm working with the adults now instead of just the kids.
Well, Jeremy, when we met at iPadPalooza, one of the more interesting stories that I heard you share was about your trip to Mexico. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
When I lived in Mexico?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I lived in Mexico for 2 years. I served an LDS mission there, and I had the opportunity to serve the people of central and western Mexico. Fantastic experience, great country, lots of people, lots of love, and great food. But that's kind of the Reader's Digest version of it. But yeah, I lived there for 2 years and had the opportunity to think about somebody else other than myself for a while.
And have you been back since then?
And you're fluent in Spanish, right?
I am fluent in Spanish. I read, write, everything in Spanish. Still dream in Spanish every now and then. That lets me know that I still got it. So
that's cool.
But no, Todd, I haven't been back to visit those areas. I got married shortly after I returned home, about a year after. And once you're married and have kids, you realize that you don't have money for a lot of other things. So.
That's right. And what are your kids' names?
I've got Brinley, Brynlie. She's our oldest. She's 8 years old. And there's Kelson, Kelson. We'll spell it for you every time you ask him what his name is. He is six, and way into Skylanders at the moment. And then there's Dane, D-A-N-E, and he is 4, and he's my terror. and then there's Landon, and it's a girl, Landon Marie, L-A-N-D-Y-N, and she is the one that's populating my Facebook and Instagram stream at the moment.
Yeah, I saw your post on the Skylander, so I asked my boys if they would be willing to give up any of theirs, and they're, no!
No, I thought I'd put it out there. I bought a pretty nice little stash on Craigslist the other day, and I'm just looking for more. My boys are into it, and my daughter's now getting into it, so the more we have, the less fighting we have to do.
Exactly.
I just saw at the E3 conference, which is a kind of a video game conference, mm-hmm. Disney is going to put out their kind of version of Skylanders. So they're going to have all the Disney characters and and have one big, huge video game with that. And it looked pretty cool.
Is it going to be part of Kingdom Hearts?
I don't think Kingdom Hearts is going to be a part of it. It's like a new property.
Totally different.
Yeah. Look pretty
okay,
cool.
Okay, Chris, your baby is way too young for you to know about this stuff. Are you playing?
I'm a huge video game person, though. So.
Okay.
I was going to say, this conversation just turned real nerdy.
Hold on, do you have a Skylanders collection, Chris?
No Skylanders collection here, not yet.
That's funny that you know all that, though, Chris. I do got to admit, I was following along with the Comic-Con stuff, so I can't really say too much about being a nerd.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. I sent mine upstairs.
Was that the terror?
Downstairs. We're taking a bath, and my son cut his foot open yesterday, and I made him take a bath before I closed it up. We use super glue. We don't tend to use Band-Aids too much around here. Super glue closes it up, seals it. They can go out, play outside, get dirt on whatever, and they're just fine. So he's waiting for the procedure. So I told him he'll be fine until I'm done. So.
Was that Dane?
That was Kelson.
Oh, okay.
He was jumping around in a skivvy, so I make sure I had him out of his.
We couldn't see that low. We're okay.
Yeah.
The show's still family friendly.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, you want to jump into the next one?
Yeah. So I guess I want to have a follow up to the other one. You said you took some business classes in college, and mm-hmm. I'd gotten into a back and forth with George Kuros a couple weeks ago about, he posted something about, do you think principals should have MBAs? And I just wondered if, like, do you feel like those business classes helped you in education at all?
I'll be honest, the only thing that I really reflect back on are my courses in economics. And it comes down to actually laws of economics more than anything. I might not take too much of my accounting principles or any statistics, none of that. I'm not a big numbers guy, so that's one of my main issues with testing. It's all about numbers. But anyway, I took from economics the law of diminishing returns, where there's only so much you can get from something before the value that its inherent value lasts. So, like if you eat Oreo cookies every day, at some point, the satisfaction you get from those Oreo cookies is going to begin to decrease. And I think that's the same with teaching strategies. At some point, that the value of that teaching strategy is going to begin to decrease. It might still have value, but the value is less than what it used to be. And so as long as we keep those strategies, our pedagogy, whatever it is, best practices, whatever you want to call it, up at those higher points where they're peaking before they begin to fall, and we continue to update our own strategies, then I think we'll be more effective. So, yeah, that's something that I took from business school, but there isn't a whole lot else that I apply to what I'm doing.
Yeah,
today.
No, I think those are excellent points. I've actually, I know that exists, but I just never heard anyone say that it exists. Yeah, I think it's a super excellent point. You've got a video on your website from ISTE 2012 where you talk about some unexpected reactions in your youth when you were in fifth grade, and then some unexpected things that happen as you were a teacher. And I just kind of, you can rehash that story if you want to, but I really want to know is, like, how have those experiences changed you as an educator? About that whole philosophy of being unexpected and what your opinion is on that whole thing.
Yeah, that was in 2012 in a conference actually up here in Portland. It was called ITSE, I-T-S-C, and so they changed the name because it's too close to ISTE. It's now called Integrated. With the capital ED on the end, and my friends at OETC put that on every year. It's a fantastic conference. You guys need to check it out. It's IPDX or ISF. We have one in San Francisco as well. Check that out. Pretty sweet stuff. But anyway, my last year in the fifth grade classroom, I had a young lady, just socially awkward, didn't have too many friends, had some I don't know if they were health issues, but that just kind of made life a little more difficult for her, unfortunately. And she was always looking to be accepted. And I started to notice that a lot of my books were missing in my classroom. And one day, she went to a teacher that she checked in. She kind of like had a mentor outside of the classroom that she checked in and out with every day. And the teacher asked to see what was in her bag, because her bag looked like it was way too heavy. And she dumped it out, and there was like 18 books in it, 17, 18 books in it. And all my books were stamped, just so if they got into another classroom, you know, they'd find their way home. And they were all stamped from my classroom. And so she brought her into my room, and I was pretty upset initially. You know, anybody steals from me. You know, those books were bought with my own money. It wasn't like the school bought them for me. I didn't make it in the classroom library. And so I was upset and frustrated and angry, sent her home, said, you know, I was going to have to talk to the principal and all that. And then didn't have the opportunity to talk to her the next day. So my initial thought was, you know, she was afraid to come back. You know, she didn't want to face what had happened. I would have come to find out they were moving out of their house and they had to clean the house for inspection or whatever, and mom kept her home to help. But I ended up going to this conference, and I was asked to do an Ignite presentation, and actually changed my Ignite presentation the night before to talk about unexpected events in education. And I opened it up talking about a fifth grade teacher of mine that saw me as you know, a kid that got a lot of what we were doing, but didn't know how to share that real well because I had horrible handwriting, still do, which is really odd. I mean, I can hit a golf ball, I can hit a baseball, but I can't write. You know, I've got pretty good hand-eye coordination, but I can't write for whatever reason. And she saw that I was struggling with that, and we had a brand new Apple computer lab. And she said, hey, let's start a school newspaper. And so me and about four other students began this class newspaper, and before we knew it, we were writing, and I was able to share a lot more of my love of learning and what I was doing through that, you know, through a keyboard than through a pencil and paper. So, you know, she just took, you know, a rough spot and did something unexpected and said, hey, let's share what you're doing in a different way. And so, anyway, then I got back to, well, I actually didn't have a chance to get back to speaking with that little girl until after. And so when I got back to school, I invited her in. We had the school counselor there. I didn't want the principal in there just yet. I wanted to kind of handle the situation before involving any admin. And I had a school counselor in there who was, you know, wanting her to be, you know, have some sort of suspension and have her pay back the books. It's come to find out none of those books, you know, close to probably, I'd say, anywhere from 75 to 100 books were taken from my classroom. And none of them were at home. Mom said that none of them were at home. And come to find out, she had been giving them to other students, other kids in her neighborhood. And it was kind of like her way of using, it was like social currency. You know, she was making friends because she was giving kids things. And so she had that connection where kids would want to be around her because she'd give them books. And so when I realized that and I realized what was going on, you know, I couldn't, I don't think it deserved the harsh punishment that we all kind of were expecting initially. And so we sat down and talked with her, and we decided to do a book drive instead. And we were going to donate the books to either a, like kind of like a check-in, check-out kind of library, borrowing library at our school, or donate them to somewhere that needed them. And we got it all started, and unfortunately some really, really scary things happened at her home, and we didn't see her for about 3 weeks. And so that actually never came to fruition. Fortunately, she was at school the next year, graduated sixth grade, went on to middle school, and was doing a lot better than she was in fifth grade. But it was a touching experience. I learned a lot of patience. I learned that it doesn't always come down to punishing the kid, but maybe finding an alternative that, you know, helps them understand what they did and do something constructive out of it. I don't think suspending her or kicking her out of school was going to make any difference. She probably would have gone on and continued maybe to do the same things, but I showed her a more constructive way of doing what she was trying to do, which was give stuff away, make connections, share her love of reading with others. So yeah, we actually ended up gathering a bunch of books and didn't really create that library, so I left them and we gave them to other classrooms to use. And so I think I've got other teachers that are giving the books away to kids to take home over summer and stuff. But yeah, it was a pretty cool experience for me to, you know, to look inside and say, you know, hey, your initial reactions that you've had probably for the last few years of, you know, detention, punishment, all that isn't the way we need to go.
That's amazing.
Well, I think that's a great example of when things happen with kids like that, there's always some underlying current. And that it's kind of our responsibility as a teacher. And like you said, jumping to a punishment may not always be the best line of action to reaching that child.
Mm-hmm. Well, and jumping to a conclusion, you know, mm-hmm. what she was doing with the books or whatever.
Right. And you know, and it took me a while to figure that out. I just assumed that, you know, she was stealing them and they're all sitting at her home and, but I mean, if you understood a little bit more of the background, which, you know, I obviously can't share everything that happened with the young lady, but it's not an easy life that she lived. I worked in a school that was about 96% free and reduced lunch, so only just a handful of our kids weren't living at or below the poverty line. And so it was a lifestyle that many of these kids lived, and unfortunately they just, you know, had to deal with stuff that I never imagined having to deal with, nor do I imagine my kids ever having to deal with.
Right.
So it's taught me a lot of patience, taught me a lot to focus more on the child and less on the consequence.
Yeah. So when did you decide to sort of step out of the classroom into the technology role?
It's kind of been a long time going. I've been in a technology role for several years. I was asked to be an instructional technology coach halftime, so I was also in the classroom halftime, which I liked because it kept my foot in the door, and it kept me relevant to practices, and it kept me, you know, it kept me honest. So, you know, mm-hmm. if I was asking teachers to do stuff, I was making sure that I was, you know, trying those same things in my classroom, and if it wasn't working, then we were working together on finding better ways to, you know, enhance learning, develop content, or develop and deliver content, those kinds of things. My previous job was in the small town of Klamath Falls, and the school district just financially is kind of in a situation where they have to focus on a lot of other things. And I had brought in some grant money and was able to kind of beef up what we were doing at my elementary school. And unfortunately, once all that grant money ran out, my school district said, thanks, I appreciate your help. And I was kind of ready to kind of jump onto it, the next step of, you know, working maybe full time in that role, and it wasn't available. So there's a school district just north of where I was in Bin Lapine that had been contacting me for several months and talking with me. I'd done some professional development for them, and it was just kind of one of those mutual agreements. My school district understood it was time for me to kind of move on to other things because they weren't able to provide, you know, kind of the direction I wanted to go, and you know, they were completely supportive. You know, I've got nothing bad to say about my previous school district. If I was to stay in the classroom, I would have never left. I would have stayed at Mills Elementary School and taught there the rest of my life. But I've got a great opportunity now in Bend to really kind of push the thinking of our teachers and to help them think a little differently and look outside of the traditional realm of content delivery and learning in the classroom. And really begin to, I guess, stretch themselves, kind of exercise different parts of their brains, parts of the learning that maybe they're not familiar with, and hopefully see some great advances.
So is this a new position for you?
Yeah, it's brand new. Actually, the job was created in anticipation of my arrival. So
last year you were still in the classroom and doing the halftime technology.
Actually, this past year, I was a language development teacher, ESL.
Okay.
So I was working with our Spanish-speaking population, and I was also doing title intervention. So I was working with our kids that weren't quite getting into the classroom and weren't quite qualified for an IEP. So those kids that are kind of mm-hmm. stuck in the middle that need that extra support. I was working with them, and I loved it all. I love especially ESL. I mean, it's one of my passions now.
Yeah.
I love those kids. I love the classroom. But this kind of just came at the right time, and it was what me and my family needed. So,
Well, one of the things that I know about you is that you're really active on Twitter. Can you kind of tell us about like how you got started on Twitter and how you see it?
I got started on Twitter, gosh, I don't want to lie, I would say 4 years ago, but I might be. Fix it in a minute, buddy. It's still on me to fix that, but it is. Maybe 4 years ago, maybe 2019. I just got on. I had some people tell me, oh, you should try Twitter. And so I got on and I tweeted just garbage. You know, a lot of it was college football at first. And you go back and look at some of my first tweets, they're all Texas UT football games. So I know some of you folks from Texas are A&M fans, but, you know, I grew up.
That's Todd.
I grew up in El Paso, and it's all right. I grew up in El Paso and watched UTEP football, but always loved watching UT. So, but anyway, I got into it and just started following people. Bud Hunt was one of the first people that I just started following, listening to, had an opportunity to meet him, become good friends with him. But other folks like Dean Shoresky, he was one of the people that caught my eye. And I've always admired that, you know, he is who he is, whether he's online or offline, and he's a great guy. I was able to connect with him in San Antonio's last month. But I found as kind of almost like a playground. I take myself a lot less seriously on Twitter now. I used to be all business and only education. I'd share stuff and tweet tools and apps. And I honestly now it's just on there for me to connect with people. I share stuff. You'll know when I'm going through all my, like, 87 tabs I have open in Chrome, because you'll see, like, this massive Twitter dump over 3 days of resources and links and blog posts. But I tend just to just kind of hang out more now. I like the connections I've created. I've met a lot of great people. I've been able to meet you guys. I met, you know, Stacy and Todd at iPadPalooza, and that was pretty awesome. But it's all come through Twitter. I mean, actually, with this new job came from just people seeing what I was doing and saw kind of my interactions online and wanted me to come and share with their school district. So it's provided me with a lot of opportunities. You know, I'm working with some national organizations out of D.C. I'm trying to push digital learning and things like that. So it's been a lot of fun, but definitely it's taken a lot of time. A lot of late nights to do some of the things that I do. So,
yeah.
I'm sure you've been a part of these conversations before, where you're sitting around with a bunch of teachers and they say Twitter's stupid. It's just for updating when you go to the restroom and all that. Like, what do you say to those teachers if you were just trying to convince them that you know maybe this is something they should try out?
They don't really. I just often talk to them. I just tell them it's something they don't really get until they try it. It's sure, you know, people post food. If I'm grilling, I take a picture of the grill. Hands down, you're going to see what I'm eating that night, and that's part of the hanging out piece. That's like I said, I like to hang out more now than you know, all business. I'll still talk shop and stuff, but I like the connections. But I just try and get them to lurk. Something that we talked about. I don't know, was it at iPadPalooza? I think maybe it was. Somebody was talking about it. I think it's maybe even John Samuelson. So iPad Sammy, there's no shout out for him. was talking about, you know, don't get teachers to start following a bunch of people. Get them to start following hashtags.
Right.
And find kind of a niche that they're interested in and get them to follow the content and the sharing that's going on there. And then from there, they'll start to follow people because they'll start to recognize, you know, people that are giving them the content they're looking for.
And yeah, obviously, that's when the learning happens most, is when you get involved with the conversations and not just – because you can learn some things from following some people, but the real learning happens when you do get them to get involved in the Twitter chats and things like that.
Oh, for sure.
Okay. You started cracking up when I mentioned this in your introduction about the Edgy Bros Award.
So this is what won them for me right there, my glasses.
The glasses. So
tell us a little bit about that.
I won the Best Hipster Glasses Award. I was up against Roy and Lee. I don't know if you guys – he's a fantastic educator out of Toronto area. And Royan is actually ended up getting LASIK surgery, so he doesn't wear his glasses anymore. So I think kind of by default I ended up winning. And I guess Nick and Tim couldn't give it to Nick because, you know, Nick's handing out the awards. He couldn't win them all. So I ended up winning. I was kind of a last-minute, I guess, entrance. I just got the glasses like 2 weeks before. And, yeah, it was just a funny joke. It was nice that they mentioned me. And I still have it up on my blog.
I was going to say, I love that you laugh about it, but you still have it advertised on your blog.
I do. I'm not huge into the awards type things, but I love Tim and Nick, so I had to put that up there. And, oh, look, there you go. Stacey's got her sunglasses on. There you go. Oh, her
glasses. There's my hipster glasses.
So yeah, I'll leave it up there. I'll wait for the 2014 awards and see what I win. Or if I win. We'll see.
Well, Jeremy, what's something right now in education that you're passionate about?
Student curated or student organized, self-organized content. I'm way into letting kids just kind of create their own resources and just dive in and kind of take their own paths to learning. I understand we live in a country where everything is standardized, unfortunately, but it's still standards-based as well. So while we're looking at different standards that we need our kids to learn, I'm into letting them kind of figure out ways to learn that themselves instead of us reading from a teacher's manual all the time and giving them a textbook and asking them to read certain pages. So a lot of things that I'm doing, a lot of presentations that I'm sharing is on, you know, just tools that help students curate that content and then maybe some strategies for the classroom on getting that going where, you know, teachers feel comfortable kind of handing over that responsibility to students and being more of a guide, a facilitator, working with the students and guiding them through the process of learning as opposed to telling them where they need to be in that process of learning.
Okay, I'm going to throw out a couple of scenarios here. So we'll go through one, then I'll ask the next one. The first one, well, we've got a varied group of listeners out there on the podcast, so this hopefully will hit both of these groups. But I'm going to give you 1 minute to talk to a group of new teachers or someone, you know, that's fairly new into education. If you could give them any piece of advice or pieces of advice within that minute, what would you come up with?
I think the first thing I tell them is stay flexible. I think all too often in education we get rigid and we get complacent with doing the same thing over and over again. But I think that also applies to those of you, you know, you've all been in the classroom and you know what it's like when the principal calls up and says, oh, we're having an assembly in 2 minutes and you didn't know about it or because of X situation or that situation, you end up having to, you know, change the day, change some routine that you have and you get frustrated with it. And I think there's nothing worse than getting frustrated with the day. Because more often than not, that becomes you let that out on the students, and the students get the bad end of that. So just stay flexible. Learning's messy, and if you can embrace that, then there's nothing that's going to happen during the school day that's going to throw you off, and you're just going to be able to kind of roll with it. And then I'm sure I'm out of my minute, but I'm going to share one more thing.
No, go ahead.
Is to stay connected. As you know, I think it's almost cliche. Sometimes, especially if you're on Twitter, the whole PLN, the connected learner kind of thing. But as much as we've heard about it, I think the most important things get repeated often. And I think that's why we keep hearing about staying connected as educators, finding those who share similar passions as us, but also finding those who might challenge our thoughts. Because if we're in a room with people that think the same as us, we often tend to ignore what's going on behind us. And if we don't know what's going on behind us, we're losing out on our own learning and our own opportunities to grow. So find those that you're passionate, that are passionate about the same things you are, but also find those that will challenge your thinking.
Yeah, so this kind of the second part of that is if you got a group of veteran teachers who maybe are, you know, locked into a certain way of doing things or have done things this way for so long, you know, what kind of advice could you offer that group?
There's a lot of things. It's a lot of what my new job is not working necessarily with our first adopters and those that are eager to do a lot of this new stuff, but helping those who are a little more reluctant. And so one of the things I tell them is that it's no longer, I don't think we need to we're not asking you to be a better teacher. We're just asking you to be a different teacher. And I think when we put it in that context, people are willing to let down some of those walls they build up of, well, you know, how dare you tell me what I'm doing isn't good enough. I've been doing it for 30 years, and it's been good enough for 30 years. Why can't we keep doing it this way? And so a lot of what I ask them to do is don't try and be any better, because you're fantastic. And I think the vast majority of our teachers we have in the classrooms are excellent teachers. We're just asking them to be different. And by different, I'm saying we're no longer the source of all knowledge. We're no longer that omniscient, omnipotent being that stands in the front of the room that has every answer. But we're more of just a facilitator, a person that's helping our students find the opportunities to learn what it is that they need to learn or what it is that they want to learn. So for our veteran teachers, I just ask them, you know, think a little different, be flexible, and be willing to invest time differently now. Don't get caught up in thinking that I'm asking you to do more or things in addition to what you're already doing, but I'm asking you to do things instead of, in replacing some of the old practices for newer practices, newer strategies and ideas that we can bring into the classroom.
Cool. Thanks for that.
Mm-hmm. We know that you travel, you know, around the country, learning, going to conferences and doing PD different places. I mean, how did that come about? Do you have districts and people contacting you to come out and share, you know, and are they finding you on Twitter, your blog, or?
I think Twitter makes my life seem more well-traveled than it really is. There's a couple times a year that I get to travel. I'm not out and about all that much. Actually, iPad Palooza was one of the first times that I was asked to travel outside my state to present. I mean, I've been to like EdCamp Omaha. I've been to DC for Digital Learning Day. But I do a lot in my state. I work for a professional development organization called the Oregon Virtual School District, which is that other, before we started, that other banner that I showed you, that green one.
Yeah.
And we provide professional development on various online tools and stuff and strategies and innovative learning. And so I do get around quite a bit in the state, and I get to meet with a lot of schools there. But yeah, a lot of the connections I make are through Twitter. People just talk to me and say, hey, what's going on? Can you help with this? And so I think I do quite a bit of, I guess, virtual support. I've worked with a lot of schools via Skype and Hangout and stuff. Like, I've worked with some schools in Australia, and I've worked with where else? Various schools across the country, and, you know, just, you know, Skyping in, chiming in, talking to teachers and students. So it's coming about through my connections with folks on Twitter. I don't do a whole lot of advertising, I guess, but I just do what I do, and I appreciate people that notice it.
What's the story with EdCamp Omaha? Seems like everyone who's anyone's been to EdCamp Omaha.
Oh, it's funny, because I've only been to one EdCamp Portland, and they've had like eight. I've only been to one, and I've been there to Middle America.
Doesn't Matt B. Gomez go up? Didn't he take a kid?
Yes, we went to the first one together. Yeah, Matt Gomez, okay, Tim Quinn, and I, we all went out there together. We all got picked up in Josh Allen's, what is he called, the man van. And Christina Peters, Mrs. K. M. Peters on Twitter, I connected with her at ISTE in Philadelphia, and her, Tim, and I hung out a lot, you know, and just connected and became really good friends, and she really wanted us out there, so we found a way, Tim and I, to make it out there to EdCamp Omaha, and it was a fantastic experience. I mean, 100 or so people, lots of great learning going on, and then Matt decided, hey, I'll come up too. And so he came up from Dallas, and I think he ended up going this last year as well. Yeah, I wasn't able to make it. I had too much going on and just, you know, couldn't do it at that time. But
you should come to EdCamp Waller next year.
Yeah.
Wilmer? All right, yeah.
Waller, W-A-L-L-E-R.
Oh, Willer, Wyler.
Like Waller. Said,
Waller.
Waller.
W-A.
Waller? Okay, sorry.
Waller.
EdCamp Waller. All right, I'll have to.
Go ahead, ask the proverbial question. Where's Waller?
I figure it's in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, many of the people that were there went, we drove a lot of back roads to get here. And I said, yeah, welcome to Waller. But looking back at everything that you've done, Jeremy, what do you look back and think wow, that was a big mistake or that was a big failure that you ended up learning from?
Learning from?
My first car and our first house. Those are the two biggest mistakes I've ever made. I didn't buy a lemon. I just bought a car that wasn't what we needed. And it was one of those, you know, I wasn't even married yet. We were engaged, and we just needed it to go back and forth when the wedding happened. And went into a dealership and walked out, and we're like, wait, what? We have a car? How did this happen? And then we bought a house right at the downturn of the market, and we suffered, paid for it dearly.
Oh, no.
So those are the two biggest mistakes in my life. No, I guess in my learning, in my own, I think one is, yeah, college, just I wish I had figured out what I wanted to do earlier on. There's some great experience. I like writing. I like being creative, and I had an opportunity to do that for a while, but I was pursuing it for the money, for the fame, the riches, and I wish that I had a little more level head going into college. So I was one of those fifth-year seniors and wish I'd graduated sooner, but there isn't a whole lot that I regret doing. I think I saw this acronym the other day, FAIL, First Attempt in Learning. And I think any failures I've made is just, you know, a step forward. We often look at the failures as a step backwards. But if you look at the scientific method, failure just tells us that we need to do something differently.
Right.
And so, you know, when you're doing a science experiment and you fail, it just means that either you didn't do enough learning beforehand to understand the process, or you need to do it differently.
Proved it didn't work.
Yeah, proved it didn't work. So I like opportunities for me to learn and relearn. So, yeah, other than first car, first house, there aren't too many things that I look back and say, gosh, I wish I didn't do that. Well, I've stuck my foot in my mouth a few times, but we won't go there.
Who hasn't?
Oh, and I also know that you're a big part of the whole Digital Learning Day. Can you tell our viewers a little bit more about what that is?
Sure, I'd love to. A couple years ago, I was in Philadelphia. It seems like all this stuff that happened in Philadelphia. I'm kind of excited that it did because I love Philadelphia. I'm a big Phillies fan. And I'm going to be a big Eagles fan because Chip Kelly's out there coaching, living in Oregon. I'm a big Chip Kelly fan. I got to meet up with some folks from the Alliance for an Excellent Education. Because of some grant work that I was doing with our language learners. They just wanted to kind of see what I was doing and how I was improving learning for them. And so I – almost, buddy. yeah, he's the most impatient person ever. One second, buddy. Love him pieces, but, yeah, he's if I need something done, he'll remind me. And they just kind of did a little interview with me, and after that they just asked if I'd continue working with them on some stuff, and they asked me to be part of kind of a group of teachers that helped discuss our approach to Digital Learning Day. The first year, we had a lot of people participating, and we had a lot of good feedback, a lot of ways to improve it. And then this past year, I wasn't able to be part of that same panel that helped plan it, but I was a part of a new project called Project 24. And what that is it's more support on a district level, and it's a group of experts from across the country. I don't know if you're familiar with Pamela Moran from, I believe it's Virginia, a superintendent out there that's doing some amazing things, or Patrick Larkin out of Boston, the Boston, Burlington area, and a bunch of other just amazing educators from various levels. And what we're doing is we're just providing support to districts where they need it. So we're trying to meet districts where they're at. So if they need help building a technology plan, then we've got support materials to do that. If they need an acceptable use plan, or if they need, if they've got a budget and they don't know what to do with it, you know, we're helping provide resources of where to go to find, you know, what tools do they really think are going to meet their learning goals, or provide data of other districts that have done other things. So Project 24 is just trying to support districts, helping them get where they want to get within 24 months. That's where the 24 comes from. And so coming this February, we'll be reaching the first 12 months of Project 24. So hopefully we'll be able to look at some of the improvements that districts have made and continue to push them forward in advancing their learning goals as well as integrating technology effectively into the school districts.
Awesome. Hey, Todd and Stacy, I know a district that could benefit from that kind of help.
Yeah, I know one too.
Yeah, just saying. Just saying.
So we may be in contact some more, Jeremy.
For sure. If you just go to alphared.org, ALL4ED.org/project24, it will give you all the information about it. You can go ahead and jump in. There's a kind of a pre-assessment that helps us see where we need to meet you, and then it also will begin to direct you to some of the resources we already have. We did a MOOC over the summer with North Carolina State, which was pretty successful. I was able to participate in a few courses there. And it's just providing districts with the resources that they may not be able to find. I know some of the data pieces and stuff are difficult to find online, so it's nice to have a place you can go to and see what other people are doing and how successful they're being.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on, Jeremy. I mean,
no problem.
Thanks so much for talking with us. I know these conversations are super helpful to the three of us, and that's why we really started the podcast. But you know, we want to help out the hundreds, if not thousands, of other people that have the potential to listen to this also. So I think that I just really appreciate you coming on and talking with us for a little while.
Glad to do it. I love sharing. To me, it's just part of what I do. You know, like last night, we live in a new neighborhood. We've got great neighbors already, hanging out with them. And my wife, it takes a while to prime me to come back in and deal with dinner and baths and putting kids to bed, because I just like talking. I like sharing. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you guys.
Yeah, for sure. If you got a blog or go ahead and repeat your Twitter handle one more time just in case people want to contact you.
It's MRMACNOLOGY, Mr. Macnology. You listen to Techlandia. With my friends John Samuelson, Allison Anderson, and Kurt Reese. You'll know me as the sound effect that gets there. I stopped listening to Techlandia cast for the content. I just kind of skipped through to hear my name. And then once I hear my name, I'm done listening to it.
Honesty right there.
I'm just keeping them honest. That, you know, I just make sure that I mentioned every episode and I'm good. No. Great stuff. I love what they do.
There it is.
I almost seem like a mask on or something when that's played.
Exactly.
I feel like I'm Darth Sidious or something.
And what's your website too, Jeremy?
It's just MrMacnology.com. The last blog post was back in February, so don't get too excited. Over the next couple of months, I'm actually going to revamp some things and change my focus a little bit on there. I've got a lot of just random stuff on there, and I'm going to focus it in on kind of the learning process and you know, introduce some of the tools and stuff, but focus really on my learning. Hey, Doodle. There's the baby. And focus on... Now she's mad because she's definitely daddy's girl. And just focus on asking some of the bigger questions than, you know, which app to use. So.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Jeremy, we thank you for being on here. It's been a blast getting to chat with you and learn and get to share a little bit more about you with our viewers.
No problem.
We wanted to remind everybody that the way you can keep track with who we're interviewing next is via our Twitter, which is EDU All Stars HQ. We also use the hashtag EDU All Stars. You can check out our website at www.eduallstars.com, and you can find us on iTunes by searching EDU All Stars with no spaces, one word. We were excited today because Stacy let us know that we are number 3 right now on the K-12 education podcast.
Way to go, guys.
So we're pretty pumped and excited about all the stuff that's happening. Stacy?
Yeah, definitely follow the @EDUAllStarsHQ. We'll be listing and announcing future people that we're going to be interviewing. Some of those include Erin Klein, @KleinErin on Twitter. Todd got to meet her at ISTE, and I was very jealous. Adam Bellow as well. He was all the talk at ISTE over his keynote. Mm-hmm. Can't wait to talk to him. And then the two guys and some iPads, Brad Wade and Drew Minock.
Yeah, and thanks for thanks for all the feedback that you guys have been leaving on iTunes. It really does help in the ratings, and it allows more people to hear the podcast. And we just had incredible support over the last week with people downloading this podcast. It's just been really cool. So any ranking or rating you can do on iTunes is very much appreciated if you like it. If you don't like it, then stay away. Don't rate it.
Don't rate it.
Just ignore this episode and don't rate it. Just move on to the next one. If you guys end up going down like three spots, we all know.
No.
No, that's not possible. But thank you, Jeremy, again for being here. We appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Glad to. Appreciate it, guys. Okay.